Hello, VetBlast podcast listeners. Did you notice you can earn 0.25 CE credits with this podcast? After listening to this podcast, head on over to dvm360.com/flex and then sign in or register for a free account. Then select the podcast and follow the online prompts to claim your CE.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. We want to thank Interceptor Plus for sponsoring this great podcast that is also available for race approval. That's right. You can be able to get 0.25 CE credits for this with the one and only Dr. Susan Little. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Adam?
Well, you know, it's gone to the tapeworms today, so I know we're going to be...
So it's going to be a good day. Parasites always make it a great day.
You know it is. You know it is. So we're going to be chatting all things parasites related with our friends of tapeworms and a little bit about our wonderful friend, Dr. Little. Dr. Little is a Regents Professor at the Crow Ewing Professor in Veterinary Parasitology at Oklahoma State University. We got to give a shout out.
Woo-hoo! Go Pokes.
Where she's active in veterinary parasitology, teaching and oversees the research program that focuses on zoonotic parasites and tick-borne diseases. She earned a BS from Cornell University, a DVM from Virginia Tech. We got to give a shout out too.
Go Hokies.
Look at you. Gee, this is so good. A PhD in, wait, everybody, we're not done. A PhD in veterinary parasitology from University of Georgia.
Go Dogs.
Yes. And board certified in veterinary parasitology through the American College of Veterinary Microbiology. She is co-director of the National Center for Veterinary Parasitology and past president of both the American Association of Veterinary Parasitologists and the Companion Animal Parasite Council. Dr. Little has authored, get a load of this, more than 150 publications on veterinary and human parasites and tick-borne disease agents. She's an outstanding veterinary educator who has received 2 Excellence in Teaching Awards from the National Student American Veterinary Medical Association, SAVMA, and been recognized as a Distinguished Veterinary Parasitologist by the AAVP. My goodness, congratulations on all your great work, my friend.
Well, thanks.
I got to ask you before we get into this, Sue, what made you go into parasitology?
Oh, parasites are the best. It's the stories they tell, right? The fascinating way they make their way through the world and into animals and back out into the world again.
Right.
I can't get enough.
Yeah. I mean, it's like life cycles galore.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then as a veterinarian, it's so nice that we have incredible strategies to control them so we can do something about them. It's not a frustrating endeavor in terms of our ability to control parasites. It's more right. Just a challenge with what we can get owners on board with and, you know, do what we know is the right thing by the patients.
Sure. Absolutely. So, you know, let's talk more about tapeworms. So in your experience, how do pet owners feel about tapeworms?
They don't like them, not at all. And it's amazing to me the level of disgust that pet owners have for tapeworms, because I think, you know, veterinarians and veterinary technicians, we're used to seeing tapeworms. It's pretty difficult to gross us out, as anybody who's ever had dinner with a group of veterinarians knows, right? We're going to talk right, whatever's most disgusting. And the tapeworms, we're almost drawn to them. If you see those proglottids moving around in the feces, that's going to draw people over in a veterinary practice. It's the opposite reaction when it comes to owners. They are completely grossed out. And the problem for us is that can really fracture the human-animal bond. It can make people less likely to keep their cat in the house or let their dog up on the couch. And so we want to have that really positive relationship between the owner and their pets. And to do that, we've got to get rid of the tapeworms.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, because understanding and or listening the pet parents' perspective is so crucial towards anything, especially when we talk about parasites. So how is this different from how veterinarians have traditionally viewed tapeworms infections?
So we're taught in veterinary school, and this is accurate, that adult tapeworms in the small intestine of a dog or a cat are not going to cause much disease. They don't cause weight loss. They're not a major medical concern the way adult heartworms in the pulmonary artery of a dog are, right? And so because of that lack of medical concern, I think we take tapeworms sort of lightly. We don't really pay that much attention to them. And that's an underservice to the pet, because the owners do pay close attention to them, and they don't ever want to see proglottids. They don't want to see them on the perianal area of their dog. They don't want to see them on the couch cushions when the dog jumps off. They don't want to see them on the bed. So keeping pets tapeworm free is really about protecting that relationship. And then there are some medical concerns associated with tapeworms, but they're not as serious as the concerns associated with heartworm or hookworm or roundworms. And so we don't always pay attention to them, and really we should.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to talk about diagnostic tools. So what kind of diagnostic tools are available for tapeworms, and how do the diagnostic tools we use impact our understanding of tapeworm prevalence?
A diagnosis of tapeworms is a challenge for sure. Historically, we just haven't been able to find them. Fecal flotation for something like the flea tapeworm, Diplodium caninum, fecal flotation will identify an infection about 4% to 6% of the time when the dog is infected. So what diagnostic test with 4% or 5% sensitivity would you use, right? So fecal flotation is the wrong way to find tapeworms, because the eggs are too heavy, they don't float, and they're shed intermittently in those proglottids, in those segments. And so we can't find them. Even best practice fecal flotation by the best microscopist in the world is not going to identify a tapeworm infection. So we really rely, we have historically relied on the owners telling us their dog has tapeworms, which is not the ideal way to make any diagnosis. But it's really all we have is they see proglottids every now and again, and they tell us, and then we know it's time to treat. Luckily now, there are new tools coming online. And so just in the last couple of years, we've had a fecal PCR for tapeworm become available. And so that's an option. Again, there have to be eggs or material in the feces to find it. So it's still going to be limited by the fact they don't shed consistently. But there's also now a fecal antigen test for Diplodium caninum that's available. So you can submit the fecal sample, and there's a copper antigen test that will say, yes, there are tapeworms in this dog. Even though there's no eggs, even though there's no proglottids, we know there's tapeworms in this dog. And that's really powerful. And it's letting us kind of reevaluate the prevalence estimates. So tapeworms are actually one of the most common, if not the most common, type of helminth in dogs. But they go undetected because we haven't had good diagnostic tests.
Yeah, I think to myself, my gosh, how many of them did I actually miss? Like, because you're right, back in the day, there weren't that many ways to truly diagnose it. So how often are diagnoses missed when testing?
Almost always. Yeah. So with something like flea tapeworm, Diplodium, 95% of the dogs that come into a veterinary practice that have a flea tapeworm infection, that get best practice diagnostic methods, are going to go right back home with their tapeworm infection, because we don't have a way in practice to identify them. Now that we have this antigen test that's really going to allow us to find a lot more of those infections, we're estimating that we're going to see tapeworms in as many as 10 to 15% of pet dogs if they're not on a preventive that has something like praziquantel in it that will limit that tapeworm infection.
We need the prazi. And you know, what are some of the signs and symptoms of tapeworm infestation?
Yeah, so classic is seeing those proglottids in the perianal area or on the feces where the dog has defecated. And owners sometimes develop kind of this morbid fascination. Once their dog has had tapeworms, they're going to inspect every defecation event to see if it comes back. They'll let us know. So that's a classic sign. And then we can see a little bit of anal pruritus. And so there may be some scooting, but really we all know that's more commonly associated with a anal gland issue rather than a tapeworm infection. But we can also see there have been reported in small breed dogs and in cats, impactions, intestinal impactions due to that large Tinea tapeworm, which can get quite big in the tiny little small intestine of a small breed dog. And then we occasionally to rarely do see clinical signs associated with echinococcus infection. And that's a tapeworm that I think will take a lot of folks back to vet school, because it's not one you see day in and day out through most of the U.S.
Back. Yeah.
But our colleagues in Canada and even in the northern United States have really had to reconsider echinococcus, because not only does it live as an adult in the dog's small intestine, but it can actually use the dog as an aberrant intermediate host and cause severe disease and fatality. And so there's been a number of cases reported from Canada of dogs with fatal echinococcus infections. And so it's just one more reason to really take tapeworms seriously. We don't see as much in the U.S., but there was a report even as far south as Virginia. So, I mean, it can happen. Yeah.
I'm sure too, with traveling and all those kinds of things with animals that we travel everywhere with our dogs now.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
And do veterinarians typically test for tapeworms when seeing those symptoms you just mentioned?
Yeah, so tapeworms aren't front of mind because we don't find them. And so it's sort of this vicious cycle where we don't see them because we don't find them. So we don't think about them when they're actually really common. For flea tapeworms, now that we have this copper antigen test available, that's a great way, you know, as an add-on to try and learn more about the tapeworms in practice. What many veterinarians do in areas of the world where echinococcus is common, there's a concern about human infection with echinococcus because, of course, it can infect people and result in very severe disease in people. So they'll just treat dogs quarterly with praziquantel. So that every 3 months, every dog gets dewormed for tapeworms, because we know diagnostics aren't ideal. They're better for teeny and echinococcus, but still nothing like what we get with hookworms or roundworms or whipworms. And so just using that praziquantel, you know, as a preventive to make sure that any tapeworm infection there doesn't persist.
And this is a good review. I know you mentioned the flea. So just to recap, how can dogs acquire tapeworm infections?
So with flea tapeworm, the most common one that we see, certainly in the southern U.S., it's ingestion of the fleas. And so even though the dog is on flea control, you know, the flea control mostly works by killing the fleas as they're on the dogs will also groom and ingest the fleas. And when they ingest that flea, they ingest the cysticercoid, the larval stage of the tapeworm. And that makes its way to the intestinal tract and then develops to the adult tapeworm. And it can happen pretty quickly. It's a short pre-patent period for tapeworms. For Dipolydium caninum, it's just 2 to 3 weeks. So if you treat a dog with praziquantel, you kill all the Dipolydium, but if there's still fleas, then they can get reinfected. And so it's really important to keep that in mind too.
And what are some of the health concerns for dogs and their families with ongoing tapeworm infestations?
So for something like echinococcus, it can be truly devastating. Luckily, that's fairly rare still, although in Canada and the northern U.S., there's more concern about human infection with echinococcus. So that's one reason to keep dogs tapeworm-free. With Dipolydium caninum, though, it's actually more common that people become infected with Dipolydium, same way as dogs. They ingest the flea, and you think, what person would ingest a flea? Toddlers. So it's usually infants and toddlers that are crawling around on the carpet in a flea-infested environment, and inadvertently, or you know, their toddlers maybe on purpose, ingest that flea, and then the parents find proglottids in the diaper just a few weeks later. And that can really fracture the human-animal bond.
I had a case of that, actually. It was interesting.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. It was a new mom, and she had a golden retriever puppy, and she thought everything was under control. She treated the dog, and she came, and she actually showed me the diaper of the baby. And yeah, those were proglottids.
Yeah.
So, you nailed it. That's exactly the situation that happened with one of my cases.
Wow. And I think folks think it's unusual, but if you look in the literature, there are scores of cases reported. So it happens fairly commonly. Like it might be difficult to get that case report published because it happens so frequently. Upsetting to the parents, for sure. Well. And it certainly fractures the human-animal bond. But you can understand why it would happen with a new baby, you know, trying to stay on top of everything, making sure the flea control's up and making sure you've got tapeworm control on board. It's a lot to keep up with, so you can see where it would happen.
Yes. Okay, so we talk about diagnosing, we talk about recognizing it. Let's talk about praziquantel in and of itself. So how does routine treatment with praziquantel protect dogs from tapeworm infestations?
So when we give that praziquantel, it's actually one of the few antihelmintics we have that's labeled as 100% effective. So it eliminates the tapeworms that are present. And that's true for Dipolydium, that's true for Tinea, for echinococcus. So it has really good broad spectrum against tapeworms. The problem is those dogs still live in the world, right? And so they're out there ingesting fleas for Dipolydium or prey species for Tinea or echinococcus. So they can get reinfected. And so that's why we have to continue to give the praziquantel. We can't just do one and done. We know they're going to get reinfected. So even with that really high efficacy, reinfection is a concern. So by giving it monthly, we know that we've eliminated any tapeworms acquired in the last 30 days from those dogs.
You know, I was chatting with a couple of our colleagues at a conference, and I was actually surprised that they said, oh, I don't routinely use praziquantel for my patients. We don't have a tapeworm problem in practice, which I was like, I shook my head. Why do you think many veterinarians, I would say many or some, choose not to routinely recommend a product containing praziquantel for dogs?
I think we treat what we see. And because, you know, going back to that, they're so difficult to diagnose because we don't see the tapeworm infections, even when doing the best fecal flotations that are out there, we're unaware that it's a need for the dog. But with the new data that's coming out where we're seeing, you know, 10 to 15% of pet dogs, as many as 50% of shelter dogs are infected with tapeworms. Oh. We know there's an unmet need there, that these dogs really would benefit from being on a tapeworm product, on a praziquantel product. So I think it's not veterinarians in denial so much as they're just unaware. And without, you know, in their defense, parasitology hasn't until now given them the diagnostic tools they need to identify those infections.
Right. And, you know, I think on the other side, I think pet parents think they're just assuming that their dogs are already protected because they're on a quote, air quotes I'm using here, heartworm protection. So do you think most owners assume their dog is protected from tapeworms, even if the product they use does not cover them?
Absolutely. And it's a very awkward conversation to have. And we've had that happen at the teaching hospital here where, you know, the dog adopted from the shelter, so comes in with everything, is treated, negative fecal, great news, here's the preventive to keep him that way. And then the dog goes out and defecates in the grass right outside the clinic, and there's Diplodium proglottids just crawling all over the place. So this owner was just told, the fecal's negative, you're doing great, you know, the dog's parasite free is what they hear. Right. And so then we have to have that conversation when we see those Diplodium proglottids, we have to say, oh, we meant other worms that you can't see, not those worms that you can see that are really obvious that are out there crawling around. We were talking about other parasites that you're protecting against. And so if you use a more comprehensive control, something that includes praziquantel, then that eliminates that awkward conversation and you truly are providing comprehensive parasite control.
I love that you're saying this because to the listeners, I got to share this story with you. And this is the reason why we actually changed our parasite prevention, because we had so many pet parents that said, wait, I'm paying all this money, Dr. Crispin, and it's coming up with tapeworms. And we had a doctor's meeting. And we're like, listen, we're all about preventative medicine. Why don't we prevent everything that let's control the controllable, you know, prevent the preventables. So let's adopt something that has everything in there so we can avoid those awkward conversations to your point. So I thought that was really interesting because you're right. It is it's kind of awkward.
Absolutely. And you know what I share with my vet students when we start parasitology, because it's not every vet student's favorite class, right? I get that. Yeah. We're not all wired the same. So people enjoy different things. But what I tell them is pet parents aren't going to necessarily be able to evaluate your surgical skills or a lot of your internal medicine skills. But if you can't control fleas, they're going to know it. They're going to see those fleas. And I see tapeworms as similar. If you can't control tapeworms, then the pet parents know that. And so we want to make sure that we're taking care of all their concerns.
Yeah, you're right. Because the pet owners, they put a lot of trust in us, the veterinarian's recommendation. And I do think that finding those tapeworm segments can, like you said, fracture the relationship. And when they're seeing them in their feces, it impacts the trust, right?
Yeah, for sure. And we know what we're recommending is in the best interest of the dog. And in order for us to protect the dog with monthly products, we have to get the owners on board. They have to also be invested in administering the product every month, right? Whatever right. preventive is used. And so if we have something that will protect against that incredibly disgusting experience they had to go through of Diplodium proglottids or Tinea proglottids, then they're that much more invested. They will give the product every month so that that never happens again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This has been so good. Thank you so much, Dr. Little. I got to tell you, I think all these words, I think parasitology should be on Wheel of Fortune. Because
That's right? An awesome idea. Yeah, we do a parasitology Jeopardy game, but I am going to suggest a Wheel of Fortune game to our team. Yes. That's a really good idea.
So many great vowels that you can buy. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast, Dr. Little. And thank you to Interceptor Plus for supporting this great session. I think learning about tapeworms, so, so important. It's a great review to all of our colleagues and students out there. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to get your credit, too. You can head on over to our DVM360 Flex website to earn your answer those questions and earn your credit as well. So again, thank you to Elanco. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Right, Dr. Little? We'll see you later.
Sounds great. Thanks, Adam.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.